Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Placer from GameWisdom.com. Welcome to another great episode of the Perceptive Podcast, where we examine the art and science of games. We got a great cast for you this evening. Our topic is going to be, once again, talking about indie game marketing, the challenges of PR, getting your name out there, etc. It's one of those topics we can just spend a very long time and a lot of different conversations on. Unfortunately, James couldn't make it. He's running into some big computer issues at the moment, but we have a semi-full house nonetheless. So please welcome for tonight's cast from Black Shell Media, co-founder Daniel Doan, and director of marketing, Raquel Hayner.
Hello, hello. Awesome to be here, Josh.
It's great to have you, Daniel. Hi, Raquel. It's great to have you on as well. So, how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty awesome. Just got done with a bunch of emails, and now I'm ready to rock on this podcast.
Great. So, it's great.
About right.
It's great to have you both on tonight. As I said, this is one of those topics that I know a lot of people, especially in the indie game market, don't really talk about or may have much experience with. And it's one thing that it's kind of interesting how PR firms, and especially YouTubers such as myself and a few of my previous guests, are, I guess, giving their own experience and helping out developers these days.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, it's all about the community effort to try to get games out there. And, you know, as content creators, you know, indie game developers and YouTubers are kind of in the same boat because, you know, we're just trying to create something awesome and then share it with as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm. And there's always a challenge in doing that, especially in today's market. We've talked about this previously on the cast, like the space of what it means to, the presence has really changed over the last 6-7 years. The people who were able to get in, like right around as the indie market was developing, both in terms of developers and YouTubers, have really managed to cement themselves. The likes of PewDiePie, Markiplier, Northern Lion, developers like Clay Entertainment, Team Meat, etc. And it's really become a very different landscape, and especially a harder challenge for someone trying to break in over like the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, it's quite difficult. I mean, you know, when people first start on like a new platform, because, you know, like YouTube was brand new back in the day, mm-hmm. and there was once a point in the game development scene where, you know, people didn't really make indie games. It was all about these like high budget, high production value games, mm-hmm. Coming from like large studios. But yeah, I mean, it's super hard to get yourself noticed, and I guess that's part of why, or that's part of the reason why I started Black Shell Media, was to be able to help, you know, people who are trying to break into the industry a better chance to get noticed, as opposed to them, you know, doing it themselves and potentially having a much harder time.
Mm-hmm. And again, like as you're saying, the perception, I think, has really changed as well. Like when we first started looking at YouTube, you know, 5-6 years ago, maybe a little later than that, you know, there really wasn't like true gaming channels. It was, again, like, wasn't seen as this big deal. And the same could be said of the indie game space. I mean, I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s with like Introversion, and like they were like this like hidden secret on the internet. Like very few people knew about them compared to, you know, the likes of Mario, Crash Bandicoot, etc. And then over like the last 8 or 9 years, things have really changed for the independent space. And, you know, there are so many different things we could talk about in terms of what has influenced that.
Yeah, it's definitely a shift in landscape, you know, because back in the day, like you said, with Introversion and Darwinia, it was like a super niche market, and they managed to, you know, hold people's attention for long enough to actually build that market. Mm-hmm. And indie game developers these days are riding on the coattails of, you know, such early adopters of the genre that is indie gaming. And yeah, it's quite interesting to see everything, you know, just build upon something that was started so long ago.
Yeah. And the challenges, I think, have also really grown as well. We've, again, talked about how easy it is to make video games these days compared to 15, 20 years ago. But at the same time, again, just getting your name out there is such a difficult task. I made a post recently about where game reviews are failing, and what I said in there was that for every major success like Undertale or Stardew Valley, there's probably a few dozen developers whose game goes up on Steam and then, you know, disappears within maybe less than a day.
Yeah, I would actually argue that there's much more than like dozens of dozens or hundreds of dozens. I mean, the thing with like Greenlight and like Steam is that it kind of allows almost everyone to be able to have a shot at, you know, being on the world's largest PC gaming platform, which is Steam. But the problem is that since it's kind of too easy to get onto Greenlight and to like pass Greenlight these days, that a lot of game developers are, you know, kind of putting the cart before the horse, you know, per se, and just releasing games that are in a state where, you know, it might not be targeted towards the right audience, or it might not be as polished as it could be, or it just might not even resonate with the hardcore demographic of Steam gamers. So it's really important to know your market, know your audience, and know how to properly market your game. Like, people think that, oh, just because I can make a game and it's a good game, that it might sell well. But the truth is, it takes a lot of behind the scenes community building and outreach to make a game successful, and on top of that, having a very polished game that resonates with the right audience.
Definitely. I think that's one of the things I've really have learned, especially over the last few years with doing Game Wisdom. There's, as you just said, Daniel, there's an opinion that all you really need in the game industry is to have a really good game. And that is obviously an important part, but especially in these days, when you release your game, there's probably a few hundred developers releasing their game around the same time. And there's so many facets about running an indie game studio that a lot of developers, especially first time or even like the old guard transitioning from a major studio to running their own, tend to slip up on. And PR is definitely one of those big pieces. I go back to this example a lot, but for people who know and love The Darkest Dungeon, for instance, that was an amazing game, but they also spent a ton of time marketing, doing research, and handling the PR side in order to help make that game the success that it is today.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, honestly, you know, people seem to think that, oh, well, my game should be good enough because, you know, my friends enjoyed it and I enjoy it, so people must enjoy it. But, you know, quite frankly, it takes so much more than that.
Definitely. Yep, and again, we could probably spend 20, 30 minutes right now talking about the state of indie game marketing and especially the PR side. But since it's both of your guys' first time on the podcast, I figure let's talk a little bit about what you do at Black Shell Media. So, Raquel, Daniel, whoever wants to go first.
Sure, I'll let Raquel take this one since I've been talking quite a lot.
Sure. All right. So, as mentioned, I'm the director of marketing at Black Shell Media. So basically, what I do is talk to hundreds of developers all the time and help them create a marketing strategy for their particular game and the genre it's in, and for them to be able to reach their goal and get their game out to the masses. So, I mean, this can be anything from creating promotions to handling accounts across all these different social media platforms, writing up press releases so we can contact, you know, YouTubers, streamers, and the press. And yeah, I guess that's my job in a nutshell.
Okay. Anything you want to add to that, Daniel?
I think that covers quite a lot of what we do.
All right. When did you guys first start up?
We actually started up a couple years ago. Prior to Blackshell Media, we were making games as Blackshell Games. And our first game, Sanctuary RPG, you know, took off. Mm-hmm. And then our second game, Overture, took off. And we were like, oh, you know, maybe we're onto something here. Because you know, like, I used to be like a solo developer, you know, working on games, and I was kind of clueless. And while I was making the game, I quickly realized that this game wasn't going to get any traction if I didn't pivot to marketing and building like an audience. So I actually had to like stop programming and stop with the game design and just double down on marketing. I've read like dozens of marketing books. I've talked to like so many people, and it's just I've learned so much about, you know, how to get like a game out there. And so I transitioned from being a full-time developer to helping other people get their games out there.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting story, Daniel, because I've heard this from a few other developers as well. People who enter the game industry strictly from either a design or programming point of view, and then they sort of see their skill set or their knowledge base transition into PR or into other aspects, and then how things grow and change from there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's definitely two different disciplines, like making games and marketing games.
Yes, definitely. I spoke with Z from Serenity Forge several times in the past, and we talked about that as well, how many people feel that it's sort of like the two sides, that you're either the artist or the businessman. So you have to either wear one or the other in terms of like your hat or your role. But what we're seeing a lot, especially from studios who are able to make it big and able to make it work, is that they can handle both sides. I think as Z put it, you can find art in the business just as you can find business in the art.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from my experience, it's all about, well, I think that art is all about trying to express yourself and trying to impact as many people's lives as possible in a positive way with what you do and what, you know, your quote unquote gift is. And I think that one of the only ways to properly do that is to learn how to, you know, truly market yourself. And if you don't, you know, want to do the marketing, or if that doesn't interest you, then you should partner up with someone who does, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, expressing yourself in the most, I don't know, like it's all about expressing yourself to as many people as possible in the way that you want your work to be received, I guess. So it's all about trying to impact the lives of others, and through marketing, through art, it's kind of like a cycle of awesomeness.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot we can talk about tonight, especially in terms of PR and that side of things. So we'll see how the conversation develops. And like I said at the beginning, this is one of those topics where we're not going to cover this in one or two casts. There are so many different parts of this, because a lot of this is really people trying to figure things out on their own. You can go to school to learn PR marketing, but then you still, but for developers, you still need to understand the game side of things and knowing who to reach out to, what kind of publications, what's their reach, stuff like that. So, I guess this first question is going to be for you, Raquel. As you said a few minutes ago, your day-to-day job is contacting developers, setting up plans, stuff like that. from the developers that you've spoken to, and you don't, obviously you don't have to give any names or anything, are there any common misconceptions or mistakes or little things that you see independent developers maybe struggling with, or like a common thing you need to help them out with?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the biggest issues that developers, especially independent developers, have mm-hmm. is that they think marketing is a one and done deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they'll wait until the very last minute. So their game is already done, but they didn't do any marketing mm-hmm. for it. And that right there is like, oh man.
Yeah.
Marketing is like, well, that's, it's something you start since the very beginning of development. And to wait until the last minute, that's a lot of time to have to make up for.
Yes. I spoke with a YouTuber, Stefan, a few weeks ago about the state of the game industry and game dev in the Netherlands, and he basically said the same thing as you did, Raquel, that he gets calls or emails from developers saying, my game's done, can you do marketing right now for us? And it's like,
right.
Yeah. Why didn't you get in touch with me like 4 or 5 months ago?
Right, exactly. So then I'll tell them, you know, and kind of warn them, like a minimum marketing strategy would be around a 6-month plan. Mm-hmm. And even then it should be, that's pretty short. So when they realize how much work it takes and how much it might cost,
mm-hmm.
they can get pretty upset because all they'll want to do is like have one promotion and then have a ton of people just buy their game, but it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's one of the things I've been learning as well. As I've been saying on these casts, and I told both of you before, I've been trying to build up my social media presence over the last 2 to 3 months because I really didn't do anything like that before. And part of that is, it's not a, as you just said, Raquel, it's not one and done. You can't just make one Twitter update and that's it. You can't just say, my game is out, and then never go on Twitter again or never put up a Facebook update. And there are developers like that. I'm not obviously going to name names, but I've seen developers who they're working on a game and there's no interaction between them and their audience. They're not on their forums. They're not on Twitter, Facebook, Google, whatever. And there's that common, the stereotype of the game developer as, you know, the guy who just sits like alone in his house for, you know, or in his studio for 3 to 4 years working on a game without any interaction from the outside world. And that probably, I should say, it did work during the 80s into the early 1000s when you're working with a major publisher who can do all that stuff for you. It's why the likes of EA, Activision, 2K, and so many more were able to succeed because they handle that stuff. But when you're an independent developer, when you're a 5-10 man studio, you need someone to be able to do this stuff because I'm sure, as no doubt you've experienced, waiting until the last minute to do any kind of PR strategy is just, it's just a damning you right from the get-go.
Right. Yeah, I get a lot of developers who come asking me to, you know, write up a press release and mm-hmm. send it out. And I try to make sure that they know every single time, like, one press release is more than likely, like, you won't probably get covered. Like, mm-hmm. you have to send out press releases, you know, for every update, for every milestone.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you send them out, the more likely you're going to get covered. Because yes. you have to start out small. Like, with any game, like, the first coverage is going to be by the smaller sites, the smaller mm-hmm. review sites. And that's not bad at all. Like, you have to grow from there.
Yeah.
You're not gonna immediately get covered by IGN. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Yep.
And
yeah, like, yep. Like, I think good marketing is, you know, kind of like, the exposure effect. So mm-hmm. let's say that, you know, as a non-gaming example, that, that a company wanted to market like a different kind of soda, you know, I probably wouldn't buy the soda if I just saw like one billboard, but if I saw like maybe two billboards, a mention from someone on the radio, and then like a restaurant serving that soda, like, I would probably try it out.
mm-hmm. Yep. And as Raquel just said, you can't just fire and forget these things. Like what I do today or very recently is I'm making multiple updates on Twitter multiple times a day. I'm posting about what's going on, about, you know, different takes on the same piece of information. But the idea is you never want your content or what you're working on to just completely disappear into the ether, because then you run the risk of just no one knowing who you are when it's time to sell your game.
Yeah, exactly. You have to keep engaged and active daily across every social media platform and indie game community, and just keep those updates going, or you're going to be forgotten and left behind, and a new game will interest others. So
yeah. And I think one thing I see a lot of game developers, like the critics of this who talk about it, is that they say, oh, games like Stardew Valley, Undertale, you know, they weren't aggressive and they made, you know, millions and millions of dollars. Everyone knows who they are. But I think it's important to remember that those are exceptions to the rule. Like we said a few minutes ago, for every Undertale, for every Stardew Valley, who knows how many games are coming and going and never being seen again. And even those games did have big coverage. They, of course, got mentioned by people like PewDiePie, Markiplier. They were able to get picked up by those major sites. So there was marketing done. It may not have been, you know, a super aggressive campaign, but you still need to have someone or some company to be able to put the word out for you. Now, another part of this, and I think this is one thing that I've been experiencing, is trying to get in touch with people and trying to let people know about your work. This has been, I think, one of my biggest problems with Game Wisdom, is trying to reach out, because when you're trying to get in touch with people and reach out to communities, as we said, you can't do it without promoting yourself. And I know a lot of places, I've been trying to get in on Reddit and a few Facebook groups. Even if you have great content, if it's you talking about it, they don't want to hear it. There's definitely that animosity versus or for self-promotion that I've been seeing.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, back when I first started out trying to promote games, you know, people, or like some people, found it kind of annoying, because it's like, oh, well, you know, like, this guy's just promoting himself. But it's kind of interesting that it's all about the angle of attack. So so let's say that, you know, let's say that on Reddit, you know, someone was like, oh, hey, I just did a thing, check it out. You know, people are going to raise their pitchforks. They're going to be like, oh, like, burn this guy. This guy is horrible. But surprisingly, if you rephrase it, saying like, hey, you know, I've done some research on this topic, and here's a way that this can help you guys out. I just want to share my thoughts. People will like react much differently, because you're leading with the value. So that's that's what I always say. You know, always lead with the value. You know, people are always asking, what's in it for me? What's how can this benefit me? And so if the first thing that comes to their mind is, hey, this person is doing something that can benefit me, they'll much likely not to, I guess, react defensively and be like, oh, like, you know, like, go away. Because by consuming that content, it's going to help them in a positive way.
Yeah. But I do still think there is a challenge in that, especially with on Reddit, which I've been trying to do myself, and I know they are just very anti self-promotion at all. Doesn't even matter like what you put down. And I think, again, there's, as you said, Daniel, it's very hard to get people to see that value. And sometimes you can do it by pitching it the right way, and other times it just seems that it can be an uphill battle.
Yeah, it's always an uphill battle when trying to promote, you know, what you do. But I definitely think that a lot of the negativity can be mitigated if you, you know, pitch yourself as an afterthought instead of it being the primary directive. You know, so like what I've noticed, like a lot of people is when let's say you have like a blog or something that you're trying to promote, a good avenue would actually be on Quora. And if you go on Quora and you essentially, you know, help people out, you know, with a Quora answer, and at the end, you know, you can say something like, hey, if you liked this answer, check out other things, or check out my other articles on my blog here. So it's like you're promoting yourself by providing value first, and then leading people to where they can find even more value, which is your website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I've definitely been doing with a lot of the cross-posting that's been going on over the last few months and pretty much most of 2016. It's definitely about figuring out how to properly, I guess, show your value, show your worth to people. And I think you're right about that, Daniel, that like the people who just go on saying, you know, buy my game or, you know, here's everything that I wrote, go and look at it, you're going to get some really strong pushback. And being able to present things, and this is not only just goes for video games, but goes for marketing as well. Being able to present something in a way that's appealing to people, especially appealing to people other than yourself or, you know, your friends and family, is a very important skill to have when you're trying to do this kind of PR work.
Yeah, it's definitely important to, you know, put your audience first. Because a lot of people, when they create content, you know, obviously they're very close to that content, and obviously they love that content, because otherwise, you know, why else would they make that content? But they kind of fail to realize that, oh, well, just because I love it doesn't mean that everyone else necessarily will. And if they don't love it, how can I frame it in a way that, you know, that, you know, adds so much value to their lives and like helps them so much, or, you know, like in the case of indie games, you know, gives them so much fun that they're gonna, you know, buy it, share it with their friends, and then, you know, create something that's kind of viral.
Right. Yeah, that's like kind of the trick for places where software self-promotion like Reddit is looked down upon, is you have to use other methods in order for you to become viral so that other people share your stuff. That can be a tricky thing to do and accomplish.
Definitely. It's pretty much how the YouTuber generation has really been able to grow and basically make a name for themselves. Like, you can say your game is great and I love it and it's going to be amazing, and people are like, yeah, okay. But if you didn't get someone like Total Biscuit or PewDiePie and any of the other major big gaming channels, if they say your game is good, you know that video is going to have easily 300,000 to 400,000 views, probably within like 2 hours of getting posted.
Yeah, the trick, I guess, with, you know, good marketing is that you're not trying to promote yourself to the point where you get like millions of downloads, or, you know, even hundreds of thousands of downloads, but you're trying to market yourself to the point where people realize how much value you're offering, and then when enough people start realizing that, then they'll share it with their friends, who will share it with their friends, and that's how you go viral.
And but again, of course, the challenge is getting it in front of people in the right way, and that, you know, we could probably spend 2-3 hours on that kind of topic alone.
Yeah, it's a very in-depth topic. But I mean, you know, it's all about trying, because some people find it like a little bit too much of like a how do I say this? Some people find it too difficult to like get started because they're kind of scared that they might fail, or that it's too difficult for them, or that they don't have enough time to, you know, do it. And it's all about, you know, baby steps. Like, start with like making like social media accounts, you know, making a Twitter and then tweeting every day, and then just making it consistent, because it's all about being consistent and just getting started.
Yep, and I can definitely attest to that as well with everything that I've been doing with Game Wisdom. In the beginning, I was afraid of, you know, emailing developers, you know, asking them for press copies or interview requests. And, you know, flash forward to today, and it's pretty much second nature. It's no longer, again, about that fear. It's about, you know, this is what I do, let me do it.
Yeah, like once you get the ball rolling, things get so much easier. And, you know, like, it's not that the activity is any easier, it's that by doing, you get so much better at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but, of course, the challenge is really getting started to begin with. And especially with video games, I think that's another very challenging part. Because, again, while PR is great, there's still that whole, you know, building the game part you have to do with this. And for a lot of developers, I hear this from a lot of developers I've had on this cast and those I've spoken to in email. I hear this common thing of, why should I spend, if I spend 2 to 3 months doing marketing, that's 2 to 3 months of time I could be spent, you know, working on this game and getting it done. And, you know, I think I need to get this game out more than I need to do marketing. And I think, again, goes back to that, again, like that feeling of it being two sides. So you're either in it for the art or you're in it for the business. And I think a lot of developers have trouble finding that happy medium between the two.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like an artist and if you're happy with, you know, making something for the sake of making it and you don't really care how many people enjoy it, I mean, yeah, that's really cool. And like, you know, like I used to, you know, do painting and, you know, I didn't want to sell my paintings. I just wanted to create for the sake of creating. But, you know, if you want to actually, you know, turn that into more of like a career instead of like a hobby, then it's all about, you know, either, you know, hiring someone to like help you out, you know, or maybe like recruiting like a team member to help you out, or pivoting away from the development side and just doubling down on learning how to market, learning social media, learning email marketing, learning, you know, just how to get your art, which is your game, to, you know, more people.
Yeah. And again, it sounds like very easy when we're talking about it, but I think anyone, I'm sure both of you can attest, it's not something you're going to pick up in a day or even like a month or two. It's a constantly evolving process. Again, every day you need to understand what's going on in social media. Whenever there's big news, you have to follow that. And trying to especially get your game out in, you know, this massive sea of information is never an easy thing.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge.
Now, here's another question for you, Raquel. Again, for what you do when you're talking to and helping independent developers, I guess this is actually a good question because I was speaking to a developer privately about this. When you send emails out, now a few minutes ago, you of course said that it's a constant process, obviously. But when you're putting together like an effective press release, I guess, are there any like common elements or standards that you use when developing like a good press release for an indie game?
Oh, sure. Well, the first thing you want to do when creating a press release is definitely have a set goal and a set message in mind. Because there are definitely different kinds of press releases. I mean, for the very busy and top tier reviewers, I mean, they're getting, you know, hundreds of pitches a day. Right? So, I mean, the truth of it is for them, they kind of just want a very simple and quick looking message. If they see a huge like wall of text, they're, you know, going to want to skip it. So, I mean, for standards, I would say put in a few screenshots, bullet point features, 100%, like got to do that. And more of like a paragraph or so description of the game. And always, always include your press kit. I can't tell you how many times I talk to developers and I ask for their press kit and they don't have one. And I'm like, oh, you definitely need that.
Yes.
Oh. I'm not going to send this out without a press kit. That would be a very huge waste of time.
Definitely.
So I would say the main things.
And I want to go back to that press kit. press kit. Sorry about my mouth just slur there in a second. But another thing I want to ask you about, Raquel, in terms of press releases, because I've heard this as sort of like I hear different opinions on. Do you include like screenshots or GIFs of the game like in the press release? Because I've heard some people say that that may be considered too quote unquote spammy for a press release.
For the press release itself, I would only include like two or three screenshots of the game and gameplay, but then just provide the link to the press kit, which should have, you know, dozens of awesome screenshots and videos and GIFs, basically.
GIFs, GIFs. I'm still having trouble knowing the correct pronunciation. GIFs,
one of those.
And I'm glad you said that, Raquel, because that's what I was thinking as well. Because I know, at least especially with Game Wisdom, that you need something to break up the text. And just a press release of nothing but text, especially when you're trying to pitch a video game, it just seems like something most people, their eyes will just, you know, glaze over while they're trying to read.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, going back to what you said regarding the press kit, and especially about developers not having like the proper preparations before they do these kinds of campaigns. We mentioned a few minutes ago, I think we talked about this off recording, but about like a professional looking site or even just a site that you can actually look like it has good readability or it's appealing to the eye. And a lot of developers, I'm sure both of you can easily attest to this, that there's a lot of issues with independent developers with having good website design or even just a good design philosophy in terms of their company's site. And there's definitely, again, that issue, as I think what you were just talking about a few minutes ago, Daniel, with people having trouble getting started or changing their routine. So this question, I think this will probably be a good one for both of you then, and either one of you can start, but in terms of, like, I guess a developer getting ready to do a marketing campaign or basically preparing things on their end, what are some, like, essential elements they need? Now, obviously, we just said the press kit, but in terms of, like, anything else, like, what should a developer have ready before they start going on social media, before they start contacting people like you, etc.?
I definitely think that the developer needs to have a really polished vertical slice. Mm-hmm. And by vertical slice, I mean like no programmer art, so no placeholder art or art that looks like it was made in like Microsoft Paint or something. A gameplay loop that's not horrible. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be compelling enough so that the player is able to play for maybe 10-15 minutes without getting bored. Definitely no bugs, since, you know, like if someone's trying to play the game and it keeps on crashing, they're probably going to get really angry. like we've talked about, you know, it's all about having the game look professional, both in terms of the actual game itself and your website if you happen to have one. A lot of indie game developers actually don't have a super professional looking website because, you know, they think, oh, well, you know, it's all about my game and not necessarily about how I present it, you know, in website format. But like, even if you don't have like a dedicated website, there's ways to make a landing page that's, you know, super professional, like itch.io, GameJolt, platforms that allow you to have web presence, you know, without you having to necessarily code one from scratch or hire someone to do it for you.
Yeah, and even just having something that looks appealing, I've seen a lot of developers struggle with. I've went on sites where it's, you know, just like a mishmash of colors. There's screenshots all over the place. I say this a lot, but I've seen so many sites where it looks like one of those places that you'll get a virus just by clicking on any of the links there. And it, again, like a lot of developers have trouble with that first foot forward. And I want to go back to what you just said, Daniel, regarding a good gameplay loop or the good first 10 to 15 minutes. But before I do that, Raquel, do you have anything to add regarding, again, like the developer being prepared to do marketing?
Right. I mean, Daniel explained it really well. And the truth is that every stage of development you're going to want, well, you're going to market your game in a different way. So the truth is, like, if, as long as you have that vertical slice, like Daniel said, you'll be okay. Like, you don't necessarily need an awesome trailer during the alpha stage or anything like that. So as long as you, you know, during that point, when you send out a release, you have, just solid screenshots. I mean, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. And as I said,
but once you like,
oh, I'm sorry, Raquel, I think I may have cut you off there.
But sure, once you get to like beta or release, obviously you're going to need to have that really great trailer to show off.
Yeah. And going, what I was saying, going back to what Daniel was saying regarding the gameplay loop or the first 10 to 15 minutes of play, this is a very important point, and even goes beyond marketing, but to basically game design as well. It's something that we've talked about in the cast multiple times regarding harmonizing game design or having everything fit in place, understanding what the foundation of your game is. And as we said earlier in this cast regarding how Greenlight has just really opened the floodgate so that anyone can put a game up regardless of its state or quality, it's becoming even more important to be able to nail the foundation of your title as soon as possible. And one of the things that we've seen, especially in the indie space, when games don't work out well or when there's developmental troubles, is when a game just, there's just no foundation to the game. There's nothing that says, okay, this is what the game is about. Instead, it's, oh, our game is this, this, and this, but now we're going to change it, or let's add 10 new systems, or let's just add multiplayer, you know, halfway through development. These are all things that, if you don't lock down what your game is going to be, it becomes so much harder to not only develop it, but to then present it to people. And I'm sure both of you, especially with doing PR and work at Black Shell, have probably seen, you know, all kinds of games in terms of varying states of quality, or even just varying states of, like, what the foundation of their game is.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to, you know, get lost in the feature creep if you don't really nail down what your game's all about. I mean, a lot of games, a lot of the best games actually nail down their core feature set within the first, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this, but like within the first week or two of development. Case in point, like Vlambeer's Nuclear Throne, which was a huge success. Their core gameplay loop was actually made in like a game jam, like a I think it's like 72-hour game jam, and the entire game was basically built around how to like flesh out that core experience of, you know, shooting people or like shooting monsters, dodging, and like leveling up and getting different perks. But one common I guess pitfall is that like a lot of developers will be like, oh, you know, this is pretty fun, and then so I'm gonna add like a bunch of content to the game without polishing that core gameplay loop. So so like, you know, certain game designers might have maybe 10 hours of gameplay, but the gameplay is absolute garbage. And so that's a lot of wasted time and effort.
Or the classic example of, my game is a first-person shooter, action-adventure, platformer, puzzle with stealth elements and dynamic questing with online multiplayer. Oh, and it's a roguelike, too.
It's a little bit much.
Yeah, that's hard. It's pretty rare for developers to successfully implement a mashup, so to speak, of genres. I mean, very rarely it'll, you know, it'll work out if well done, but if you try to just combine too many features and genres together, it's not going to work out, because a lot of players, especially on Steam, they're very like hardcore RPG or hardcore roguelike, and they don't want to spend their extra cash on a game that, you know, has all these elements they're not particularly interested in.
Yep, and even, and the other problem, again, as we were just saying, when you start throwing in all these different elements, it muddles your core gameplay loop. Even, like, very weird or very out there games, the ones that work still adhere to, again, that basic foundation. What's, like, 10 to 15 minutes of your game is like. We just mentioned Nuclear Throne, but something like The Binding of Isaac. It's a very weird-looking game, very unusual imagery, but it never, you know, steps beyond what that core foundation is. And a recent example that I've been talking more about would be going back to one of my favorite games, The World Ends With You, which is a crazy RPG with systems on top of each other that are so weird, like you wouldn't think it would all make sense, but it all feeds back into that same core gameplay. So instead of it being seen as discombobulated or stitched together, it feels like one solid design. And that is definitely something that makes the most successful indie games, when it feels like everything is working together. And I'm sure for you guys, when you do see those games, when they come across your desk or your email or whatever, and you see a developer who really knows their foundation, it's just like, you know, like an aha moment compared to the other ones that you've seen and looked at.
Yeah, I definitely think it's like a learning experience, though, because a lot of developers, you know, this might be their first game, and so they're super excited, and they might just want to toss everything into their quote-unquote dream game, and, you know, that's perfectly fine. I mean, you know, everyone has to, like, start somewhere, but when it comes to, like, trying to turn it into a career, definitely just focus on perfecting one core game loop instead of just tossing everything into the same pot.
Yeah. And you can, as I said, you can really see the difference, especially not just in the success of the studios, but in the quality of the games themselves. One of my favorite indie studios recently would be Clay Entertainment, who have not only been able to succeed as an independent studio, but they're one of the few developers who have done early access right. I don't think they've had, like, one... I think maybe like Shank 2 may have been their only game that I think has few more negative reviews, but they've never, you know, had the out and right, you know, horrible, you know, 2 out of 10 game. And I think a lot of that, again, is just standardizing their practice and knowing what they do, what works, and then just refining that to a point that they can apply to any one of their games.
Yeah, like one more important thing I'd like to add, though, is that it's all about getting the right feedback the right feedback at the right time.
Yeah.
Because a lot of developers, you know, they might be holed up in their ivory tower just coding away for months on end without really, you know, getting true player feedback. You know, they might think that, or they might be married to their idea that, oh, I want to make this, you know, roguelike platformer with penguins, and they're like, oh, this is gonna be awesome, you know, it's gonna be giant penguins, it's gonna be robot giant penguins with like flamethrowers, and so they're just stuck on that. But like, what if people don't like giant robot penguins with flamethrowers? So it's all about I guess adapting your core ideas and getting feedback from, you know, actual real players, and then giving players what they want while also staying true to your vision of the game. So I guess, long story short, talk to gamers and find out if they actually like what you're doing.
Yeah. And that, I think, is another really good point, Daniel. And we see this with a lot, especially with like first-time developers, as you said, that there is that God complex of, you know, this is my game, my vision. You know, if you don't like it, get the hell out, kind of mentality. And we see this especially a lot of like younger developers. Like, we've seen over the last few years some major blow-ups from like first or very early independent studios of having, you know, those PR disasters. And there's definitely that, you know, push and pull between how much do I, you know, keep to myself? How much do I let out early? And you'll hear this from different developers. Everyone has their own opinion on this matter. I've spoken to a few developers who they basically say, the second my game is ready, it's going on early access. I want everyone to see this and let me know what's going on. And then there are developers who are like, I want this game to be perfect, and then I'll show it to people. And there are pros and cons to both approaches. And I think, as we've said, especially with like PR and marketing, it's all about developing your skill, understanding what works, and again, applying it to your desired project or your desired product.
Yeah, I mean, in the marketing world, you know, it's all about testing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also applies, you know, to the game design world because, you know, people need to, this is kind of harsh, but people need to check their egos sometimes and like realize that their opinion may not be the right opinion and that people should, you know, be more open to, you know, truly getting feedback from people. Now, whether that's, like you said, like releasing a game on early access or whether that's, getting like a focus test or like a focus testing, studio to like help them, you know, get feedback, you know, that's like kind of private feedback or whether that's even like, you know, just posting the game on Reddit and getting people's opinions that way. It's all about testing which way works best for you and your game. And then if it works, just like double down on it for your next projects. If it doesn't work, then stop doing it.
Yeah. And it's one of those weird things because at the end of the day, game design is pretty much a dictatorship. You're the one, you have to make those decisions, but you still need to get the opinion of people. When I spoke with Charles from Gyra Technologies on the game Concealed Intent, he talked about how he was very receptive to comments and criticisms and suggestions from the fan base, but at the same time, there were a few elements he would not budge on, because I think, as he eloquently put it, if he changed that, he wouldn't have his game anymore. So you have to still adhere to your core vision, but you still have to be malleable to, or adaptable to basically say, okay, maybe what I came up for this idea isn't the best thing. Maybe I can take their suggestion. And there are so many examples I've spoken to of developers who have had vastly higher quality games thanks to early access and getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of eyes on their game, you know, examining it and breaking it down in detail.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first two games, Sanctuary RPG and Overture, a lot of the game design was, you know, just me coming up with the ideas, but a lot of it was, you know, me working with other people, getting feedback from the community and implementing what I thought was like the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you're just developing this game, you know, in your own cave or your own studio for 3 to 4 years, it's very easy to get into that echo chamber mentality of it's fine, everything is great because, you know, I don't have a problem with it. You know, it must be everyone else who doesn't understand what the game is. And we're seeing, especially in today's market, that kind of mentality just doesn't work anymore. As we've said over just about course of an hour in terms of this recording, but you cannot just, you know, fire and forget your game these days and expect it to sell. We've seen so many smaller, like, mobile developers, developers on Steam, the App Store, etc. They put their game up and, you know, lo and behold, in less than like an hour, it's gone off the front page, never to be seen again. And it leaves a lot of people just scratching their head going, you know, what just happened to my game? Now, I guess another part of this, especially we've spoken about PR marketing all throughout this cast, one of the bigger challenges I think both of you can attest to in terms of getting the game out there, and this is one thing I'm really curious about, especially for more of the for the marketing and PR side, because again, this is something that most developers aren't experienced with, is with the, I guess, a quote-unquote YouTuber generation. Now, obviously, for you guys at Black Shell, you've no doubt have interacted with YouTubers of, you know, all kinds of outreach and popularity. So I guess I think we'll start with you this time, Daniel, for this question. As someone who, again, has made this transition from designer to PR and now handling things on that front, what are your, I guess, thoughts on, I guess, how the YouTube generation has really grown and manifested itself in the game industry, or specifically, I guess, marketing games?
Sure. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for YouTubers now to, you know, start promoting games and to start, I guess, you know, playing like a key part in making games successful. And it's all about, you know, whether there's a good fit for the audience. So mm-hmm. let's say that there's a YouTuber that, you know, loves action RPG games, and there's a developer who is developing an action RPG game. You know, obviously that'd be an awesome partnership if the two could work together, because at the end of the day, it's a win-win, you know, thing where the YouTuber's audience overlaps perfectly with the game developer's audience, resulting in, you know, people loving the game, people loving the fact that, you know, the YouTuber was able to let them know about the game, and the developer being awesome, or the developer being hyped to learn that the YouTuber's audience is enjoying his or her game. So it's all about finding the right opportunities to cross promote with an audience that'll be receptive to your marketing message. And in my example, the message would be, hey, like, I have this awesome game and you have an audience that likes this type of game, and, you know, we should work together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And one of the things that we've seen, especially over the last 5 or 6 years, is how a lot of YouTubers have become almost celebrities in their own right. Again, we've seen the likes of Total Biscuit, Markiplier, PewDiePie, and probably a whole lot more that I'm forgetting it or probably have never even heard of yet, who have made names for themselves. So I guess to move this to you, Raquel, as someone, again, who handles marketing and reaching out, when you're reaching out to, like, YouTubers as opposed to, like, developers or members of the press, do you, like, handle your marketing any different, or do you communicate to them in a different way or present the game differently, I guess?
Sure. I think when it comes to, yeah, you definitely change your voice, I guess is the best way to say it, when you're reaching out to YouTubers and streamers rather than the press, right? I mm-hmm. mean, to the press, you want to be professional and to the point, but to streamers, I mean, they're gamers just like you who just want to have fun. So I think one of the easiest ways actually to talk to YouTubers and streamers is to just stream yourself, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of other YouTubers and streamers enjoy streaming with other people. So Black Shell Media, for example, has, you know, their own Twitch streaming thing. And a lot of YouTubers and streamers out there just want to play with you. mm-hmm. So it's a lot more casual, definitely.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I want to touch on, and this may be a little too big for this podcast conversation, but I just want to point out, because I know someone will most likely bring this up, but there's also the issue of, quote-unquote, corruption with game journalism, whether it's people essentially being paid, you know, under the table to look at games, the problems with review scores. I made that piece a few weeks ago regarding the problems of the 7-9 review scheme. And even just, again, I guess there's a lot of people, I'm not going, again, name names, but looking at various game communities or development communities, there are a lot of people who have really, I think they've grown to despise the streamers and the YouTubers, essentially dictating, you know, what games are shown, what games are popular, etc. So this question, again, it's probably too big to get into too much detail now, but for both of you, and again, especially with Black Shell Media, what are your thoughts on this sort of, again, this concern about corruption when it comes to reporting games and game journalism?
I think I'll let Raquel handle this one.
I mean, I don't personally have any experience with... Do you mean, like, just what do I think about buying reviews, or...
Yeah, about, like, this... Not,
right? I mean, it's entirely fake anyway, and the community is going to find out and know. Just everything about that is such a terrible idea.
I guess to sort of elaborate on that question, sort of like, I guess, what are your thoughts on, I guess, the quote-unquote lack of standards when it comes to looking at games? This goes back to my piece, again, I wrote about game reviewers, but when you look at things, whether it's with a website or with a Twitch stream or YouTube channel, there is nothing that essentially, quote-unquote, qualifies someone to look at games, which on one hand is great, anyone can do it. But at the same time, it's very hard to, you know, separate the signal from the noise. And I've spoken, and I've heard a lot of horror stories from developers about how, you know, one wrong, how someone who promotes stuff on YouTube may get something wrong, and thereby this game gets screwed because someone didn't do their research or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a challenge. And I mean, in my opinion, the only way to battle that is for you to just contact them yourself and be like, you know, like, we've gotten reviews that aren't always so good for our games, but then the writer or the reviewer wouldn't mention, like, this game is in early access, you know? So what they say is, you know, pretty unfair. So we just have to keep updated with the reviews and who's talking about you. And it's an effort and a constant action of reaching out to them and having to correct any misinformation. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely just a struggle.
And it's one that, again, it's something as a developer you don't really think about all that much. It's not on your plate compared to, again, developing a game. But as I think you two can definitely agree on, once you start doing marketing and PR, it really becomes a part of your job. It's, again, it's not something that you can say, oh, I'm only going to post something on Tuesdays each week, or I'll make an update once every 2 months and that'll be enough. It's something you have to do day to day.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to everything, when it comes to self-promotion and community development and reaching out, it's just a constant, constant work.
All right. I know we are approaching a little bit over an hour, so I think we will begin to wrap things up in the next few minutes. So far, this has been a great cast, and as I said, this is one of those topics that it's not going to be easily solved or easily explained in a few casts. And I'm sure pretty much 100% that we'll be coming back to talking about PR and marketing with more guests and more conversations in the future here. So we'll probably begin to wrap things up. Again, I'm sure we could sit here and chat for 2-3 more hours, but I'm pretty sure you two are very busy, so I don't want to keep you all day long.
Sure.
I guess to begin to wrap things up, I guess first off, and this is for both of you, in terms of marketing and PR when it comes to video games, are there any aspects of it or any details we haven't touched on yet in this cast that you would like to bring up or point out right now? And either of you can go first here.
I guess I would have to point out that marketing is not evil. I've, you know, like, there's this underlying misconception, you know, that, oh, you know, marketing people are out to get you. Marketing people are, you know, always trying to get you to buy things. But the reality is that marketing is all about finding the right audience for the right product. And so if done properly, marketing is absolutely not evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And yep, I can agree to that. And I'm sure, again, this is one of those things for developers listening to, they're probably, you know, shrugging their shoulders going, yeah, right, you know, that kind of thing. But I can attest to that as well. You have to, if you're going to be in the public, if you're trying to make something appealing, you have to do marketing. And as I've said multiple times in posts, if you have no interest or no skill or you don't want to do it, then get someone who can. It can very well mean the difference between your game, again, getting in front of the eyes of people or disappearing off of Steam within 12 hours. For you, Raquel, do you have anything to add?
I mean, we generally covered the basic topics, but mm-hmm. I would just say, especially as an independent developer, make sure that the masses know that there's a face behind the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't just code all day long. Get involved with the community. Like, mm-hmm. self-promotion isn't just putting out stuff about your game. You want the people to realize that you are a person, and they like knowing that, you know? They want to play with you and mm-hmm. get to know you, and that's just a part of branding. So
yeah, and I think that's something else I've been trying to do more of. I've been doing actual like videos of myself for the YouTube channel, actual like seeing me instead of just hearing my voice.
Yeah, that's great.
But it's not great when you're a 10 for 10 introvert. It takes a lot to push you into that. But as I've said multiple times on the cast, I think Game Wisdom has really helped me with becoming more extroverted. Again, having a conversation with the two of you today, that probably wouldn't have happened 7-8 years ago. Being, you know, in front of a camera on a day-to-day basis, that definitely wouldn't have happened 7-8 years ago. But it is something you have to learn, and you made a really good point there, Raquel, that especially as a developer, you need to, you know, be open. The beauty of independent development today is the transparency there, and you have to leverage that. You need people to know that it's not just, you're not, you know, person 50 on the game development team at EA. This is your game. This is your project.
Right. Like, it's good for people to know that you're not just trying to, like, put out a game to make money. Like, you want to show, like, this is your baby, mm-hmm. and I am the person creating it, and be proud of it. And
yeah.
It sends a good message.
Yeah. And there are countless examples of that. Very recently, for those of you listening to this cast, Prison Architect, and again, going back to Interversion Studios, they have officially declared the game done. You know, after multiple years, they went their own Kickstarter, early access, the whole shebang, post-release support, the game is finally done. And in all that time, they have done an exemplary job of marketing it, putting themselves out there. They release videos every month of them talking about it. And I think it will go as, you know, the poster child example of how to handle PR and early access and all that stuff right. And it is something that I think developers should be taking notes on, especially if they're trying to sell their own game. And going back to what Daniel was saying earlier in the cast regarding, again, like, you know, pitching that core gameplay loop. When Prison Architect was, like, first there, you know, update 1, who knows what the actual version number was, it was just literally a map, and you could, like, put, like, trees down or put buildings down. That was it. There was, like, no gameplay whatsoever. But, again, they presented themselves well. They said, okay, this is what we have, this is what we're going for, and this is what you can expect to see next. And they just handled the PR of that brilliantly for quite a few years. I think that's very impressive.
Yeah, it's all about being really transparent with the community. Mm-hmm. And and it's all about not being discouraged, because mm-hmm. Introversion's been making games and marketing games for quite a long time, and this yes. is this is definitely a very long journey of theirs. So yeah, it's never too late to start marketing. So for all of you game developers listening right now, if you haven't started yet, start now.
Yes. And that actually brings up a good question that I want to ask Raquel about. Again, going back to, again, your job of setting up these PR campaigns, doing marketing, etc. For games that are going the distance, I'm talking about a game that's going on early access with, you know, a plan, maybe 1 to 3 years on the platform, or something that's long term, like Prison Architect or Kerbal Space Program, or even like a game similar to Minecraft, that it's a game that's you're not going to have a finished game for a very long time. When you're approaching marketing for a game on that caliber, when something that's not going to be out in 5 to 6 months, how do you, I guess, alter your marketing strategy when we're talking about these, you know, massive game development projects?
I mean, in that sense, the phases of development aren't too different, except for the fact that, you know, they're just spread out longer. Mm-hmm. So it's not that huge, huge of a difference. Because, I mean, during, like, the beginning of development, sure, you'll do less of, like, you know, social media platforms because you don't exactly have the content to post. But in that sense, you would go on like TIG Source or Reddit and IndieDB to just start making a name for yourself and let people know who you are and gather player feedback. And then, you know, those sources become replaceable once the game is actually released. So for longer scoped and bigger scoped games, I would just say, I mean, you need to put down a timeline. Like that's that's where I start is you set goals for alpha, beta, early access and full release, and promotions come in waves 100%. So you just have to make sure that between each of those time periods, you have something going on, whether it's just social media or a viral video or a contest even, you know, or a giveaway. There are just so many different strategies you can use to fill up that time. So as mentioned, just you got to keep it going and keep it constant and don't forget and don't just go a couple months without promoting.
And I know we just touched on this kind of long-term game development, but that is definitely a podcast-worthy topic in and of itself, and we could probably spend easily another hour talking about that. But I think that's a good summation for at least right now. I guess I am just about out of questions for both of you, so we will probably wrap things up. I guess for my final question then, for both of you, do you have any final thoughts? Anything you would like to, you know, end the cast on?
Raquel?
Not too much. I mean, I'm glad I got to be here and I got to talk. I always love talking about games. So, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Because, like, I mean, I've been following GameBism for quite a while and always love the awesome game design content. And I was like, maybe I should reach out to Josh, and here we are. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks to both of you for coming on. And, yeah, it's always great. I mean, hell, I think anyone who's been on this cast knows that I can talk about game design, you know, till the cows come home, basically. We can, who knows how long we can get going if there wasn't, you know, those annoying limits of food and thirst and hunger and all that stuff. But I think, again, it was a pleasure meeting both of you today. Definitely wish you the best of luck with Black Shell Media, and it'll be great to have you both back on again, maybe in the future.
Sure, yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Great. So with all that said, we're going to wrap things up for today's episode of the Perceptive Podcast. For those of you who've been watching, if you'd like to support GameWisdom, we, of course, have multiple ways available. First, if you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. We are always looking for new guests, be it student, enthusiast. As long as you're interested in talking about the industry, we'd love to have you on. For more information on that, you can email me at josh@game-wisdom.com. To follow me on Twitch and Twitter, you can find me on there under GW Bicer for updates of new content as well as my thoughts throughout the day. Be sure to subscribe to the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. There should be a link to that on the front page. And you can just find me on YouTube under Game Wisdom. There you'll find my collections of Let's Breaks, video examinations, indie spotlights, live plays, and even by the time you're listening to this now, the start of my own weekly live show, which will, of course, again, going back to putting yourself out there, I think that's the ultimate example of that. And last but not least, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom directly, you can find us on Patreon under Game Wisdom. Donations would be really appreciated. They will allow us to have the monthly funding we need to keep going while supporting ourselves. It will also mean more content for you folks to enjoy. And there's, of course, some great rewards as well. So, I think with all that said, we'll end things here. Again, Daniel, Raquel, it was a pleasure having you on tonight. And definitely love to speak to you guys again real soon.
Sure, yeah.
Yep,
thank you.
Yep. Thank you so much for having us again.
Awesome. All right. So with that said, we'll end things here. Thanks again for tuning in to the Perceptive Podcast. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.